Tektopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi. Den er udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Teknologiens Mediehus, HI-messen, Index Award, Innovation Center Danmark og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Tektopia.
Tektopia.
I forrige udgave af Tektopia, der var jeg en tur i Israel og høre om kunstig intelligens og høre om deres nationale strategi for kunstig intelligens. Og jeg besøgte også Samuel Scheer på den danske ambassade, hvor han sidder hos det danske innovationscenter. Han havde nemlig lavet en rapport om kunstig intelligens i Israel, og de mange virksomheder, der er opstået dernede, de mange startups, som arbejder med kunstig intelligens. Israel har et meget livligt teknologistartup-miljø og en række universiteter, som producerer rigtig mange mennesker med teknisk kunde. Det sjove ved den kunstige intelligens er, at den faktisk breder sig til andre områder. Israel er ikke et land, der er kendt for at have en bilindustri, men ikke desto mindre, så er landet begyndt at gøre sig gældende på netop det område. Og det skyldes, at man har erfaring med kunstig intelligens og med droner og med andre teknologier, der kan bruges i moderne biler og også i fremtidens selvkørende biler. For eksempel så blev den israelske startup-virksomhed Mobileye solgt til den amerikanske chipproducent Intel for 100 milliarder danske kroner, og det er fortsat det største kunstig intelligens startup-salg i verden. Mobileye de bruger kunstig intelligens til at lave billedgenkendelse, der er en central teknologi i udviklingen af selvkørende biler. I denne udgave af Tektopia, der besøger jeg en israelsk investor, som investerer i netop transportområdet. Men vi starter hos Samuel Scheer på den danske ambassade, hvor han sidder hos Innovation Center Danmark. Han har som sagt skrevet rapporten om kunstig intelligens, men han har også kigget på hele transportsektoren, og hvordan teknologien forandrer den, og hvordan Israel faktisk er gået hen. Og hvordan Israel faktisk er gået hen og blevet en global spiller på transportområdet, selvom de ikke producerer en eneste bil.
The story of Israel being a major superpower in automotive technology is a funny one, to put it mildly. There's no cars in Israel, there's no cars being produced in Israel, there's not even supplying industries like you have tier 1, tier 2, tier 3 major companies in Israel, to my knowledge. And of course, there's some, you know, unrelated that also supply the car industry, such as Intel, who makes their chips here, or Orbotech, who was recently bought for a few billion dollars, who is also working in the semiconductor industry. So there are industries that supply to the automotive, but not really with a core focus on automotive, at least historically, I would say. It was just one of the industries that they served their products to. And so it's not exactly natural that Israel would become a hub for automotive technologies. And the reason that I, or the ways that I found that I can explain that phenomena to myself is that when you look at the things that Israel has been historically very, very good at in terms of technologies, whether it's cybersecurity, whether it's artificial intelligence, whether it's radar and LiDAR technology that you can use for drones, these are things that Israel for a number of years, and actually you could almost say for a number of decades, has been exceptional at globally. Not necessarily better than the best ecosystems worldwide, but good enough so that they compete globally. And within, you know, a country of 8.5 million people and 250,000 people in high tech, the word gets around. So you understand what your capabilities are on a global level. And then what happened in automotive technology, in my interpretation, is that a lot of the things that are happening in the automotive space, suddenly these technologies became relevant at the end of the day. And maybe Israeli serial entrepreneurs and the venture capitalists and others are particularly sensitive to such changes in the ecosystem or whenever an industry majorly changes its perception of itself and its course. And so when you look back 20 years ago, or maybe let's say 30 years ago, you didn't need to create any cybersecurity software or hardware for cars because there was no connectivity in the cars. So there's no way to get in unless you plug into manually into every car. So that's a very different cybersecurity risk. And at the same time, in terms of artificial intelligence, there was no desire of customers, or at least no technology possibility either, to be doing self-driving cars, to even have a shot at it. Whether we succeed or not is then a different question, but we do have autopilots and all these things going globally. You also have in the third industry, which is around the radar and LiDAR technology. These are things that Israel has been doing very well on due to self-manned drones and these kinds of topics. And also for the military, it's been of crucial importance. And suddenly, if you want to have a self-driving car, you need to understand the surrounding very carefully, very deeply, and very efficiently in terms of processing power. So all these, and I could name a number of additional technology verticals, but basically these things, in my interpretation, were not relevant historically for the car industry. And suddenly they became majorly relevant because consumer perception changed, the perception of the car companies changed, new companies like Google or Apple and others entered the car industry space because they realized that there's a lot of value being left untapped. And so the Israeli ecosystem, I think, has stepped up to that game. We have now around 450, 500 automotive technology startups in Israel. Some of the biggest financing rounds for automotive technology startups anywhere in the world are happening right now as we speak in Israel and are started by people who may not even have any automotive technology background. You have now all the big car manufacturers and others, tier one and tier two, have our venture scouts or full-on R&D centers here in Israel that was unthinkable 10 years ago. So you find that there's sort of, again, this perfect storm that's being created. And whether we'll have an automotive technology industry in 20 years from now in Israel remains to be seen. And it's majorly based on the value that can be generated and the value long term and where these companies even, whether they survive and who will dominate the industry. But I think the Israeli ecosystem will be part of that solution and will be part of these, of at least some of the winners of that sort of competitive race. And so they're up for the challenge. And I think that's the story in a nutshell.
Jeg står i en ganske charmerende del af Tel Aviv, hvor man har taget et ældre kvarter, som har været en tysk koloni, lad mig fortælle, og lavet den om til sådan et sted med græsplæner og palmer og barer og lidt skyskrabber i udkanten med sådan nogle fancy skyskrabber, som man på en eller anden måde ikke lader sig genere af, når man er hernede i det her havelandskab. Men her der ligger også et hus, hvor der ligger et firma, der hedder Manif Mobility. Og grunden til, at jeg er her, det er, fordi Tel Aviv er blevet sådan en hub, et sted, hvor en masse virksomheder, som beskæftiger sig med transport, faktisk er vokset frem. Der er ikke færre end 550 startups i Tel Aviv, som beskæftiger sig med transportløsninger. Og man kan sige, at det er lidt besynderligt, når man befinder sig i et land, som slet ikke producere biler overhovedet. Men det handler om, det er i virkeligheden digitale løsninger. Det måde, jeg for eksempel kommer herhen på, det er med en taxa-app, der hedder Get, som dybest set er en app ligesom Uber, og fungerer ligesom Uber-appen, at man bare bestiller en taxa på sin app, og så kommer den og henter en, og så betaler den automatisk via det kreditkort, man har puttet ind i appen. Men det er rigtige taxaer, fordi Tel Aviv vil ikke have Uber, de har smidt Uber ud, så det er faktisk helt almindelige taxaer, der er tilknyttet den her app, men det fungerer super effektivt. Det er ikke den eneste mobilitetsløsning, som kommer hernede fra. Måske kender nogen den app, der hedder Waze, W-A-Z-E, som er sådan en kortjeneste, ligesom Google Maps for eksempel. Og Waze er faktisk blevet købt af Google, fordi Waze var et israelsk firma oprindeligt. Der er også dem, der hedder Mobileye, som laver teknologi til selvkørende biler, der blev købt af Intel Chip, den amerikanske chipfabrikant, i 2017 for det største beløb, som nogen nogensinde har givet for en israelsk virksomhed, $15 milliarder. Så der er masser af penge i det her felt, men dem, som jeg skal ind og besøge nu, Manif Mobility, det er sådan nogle risikovillige investorer, som samler en masse investorer og laver en fond, og så hjælper de her helt tidlige startups med at komme i gang. Det vil sige folk, som har en god idé, eller forskere har et patent. Dem hjælper det med at komme i gang inden for det her felt, som man kalder mobility. Det kan oversættes til bevægelighed på dansk, men det giver jo ikke rigtig mening. Det handler om at være mobil og bevæge sig rundt, ligesom de fire unge mennesker, jeg kan stå og se her lige nu, som kører på elektriske løbehjul op ad bakken. Dem er der nemlig også rigtig mange af her i Tel Aviv, ligesom der er mange af dem hjemme i Danmark. En af dem, der står bag Manet Mobility, det er faktisk en af de folk, der også var med til at starte det firma, der hedder Better Place, som nogen måske husker, fordi de startede i Israel, men et af de få andre steder i verden, de var til stede, det var faktisk i Danmark. Og det var den her elektriske bil, som man kunne få skiftet batteri på sådan nogle slags batteriskiftestationer, ligesom tankstationer. Det var et eventyr, der ikke gik så godt. De gik konkurs efter ikke særlig lang tid. Men en af de folk er altså med i den her sådan, investeringsfond. Men jeg skal snakke med en af de andre. Han hedder Olaf, og han sidder heroppe på første sal i det her meget hyggelige hus, i det her meget hyggelige kvarter. Og nu skal jeg høre lidt om, hvorfor Israel er gået hen og blevet en ledende nation, kan man sige, på transportområdet.
My name is Olaf Sakes. I'm a partner at Maniv Mobility. Maniv is a venture capital fund that invests exclusively into mobility technologies at the early stages, so usually at seed stage. We're based in Tel Aviv, but also have an office in San Francisco and are investing globally. We just closed our first European investment, but have a portfolio of 26 companies across the US, Israel, and Europe. So we've got a pretty broad base of investments. And then we have a wide range of relationships across the automotive industry, including many strategic investors.
So could you tell me more about this space? When you say automotive and mobility, what kind of companies are you investing in? What do they do?
So we're investing in four different areas around the mobility space. The one we call these, we have kind of different names for these buckets that represent the major disruptions that are affecting mobility at this stage. The first is around data, so we call it data and connectivity. That includes, especially in the Israeli context, also cybersecurity, which is a major challenge for vehicles of the future. The second bucket is around business model innovations. So if you think of companies like Lime and Bird or Uber and Lyft, these are companies that are changing the way in which we transact and pay for trips and how we get around. They're changing the business model from owning cars to something else. And so we invest in companies in that space. The third category is around autonomous technologies. There's been a lot of talk around that. So we have several investments in that space. And then the last category is around vehicle architecture, which includes things that go into the car and also electric vehicle technologies.
And the obvious question here might be that you're based in Tel Aviv and you started the investment fund in Tel Aviv, but there is no car manufacturers in Israel, so why?
I think we're in the midst of a very interesting transformation that's happening, not only in the automotive industry, but many other industries, which is that there are two ways you can look at it. One is from the perspective of the industry, and the other is the perspective of tech. So from the perspective of the industry, there are many different industries that haven't changed and haven't been disrupted by digitization until now. And now that there's the shift happening, they're starting to focus on innovation. That's from the perspective of the industry. From the perspective of tech and innovation hubs like Israel and also Silicon Valley, you have this history of making software-based startups, which were generally tackling unregulated industries. So if you think of something like Windows or consumer electronics, SaaS products, etc., you can. There's not that much regulation around those spaces and a lot of freedom to deploy at scale. And industries like automotive have traditionally been avoided because of the challenges involved in addressing that market. But for various reasons, tech has started to move into these areas. It's seen the scale of the opportunity, and other opportunities, I think, have become more saturated. So you're seeing a lot of entrepreneurs migrating towards the space. And on the other hand, cars have become, in the meantime, a lot more digital. There are many computers. There's a platform that's beginning to emerge that can house and require software and various kinds of other innovation sensors, cloud-based technology integration, etc., that allows all the different technologies and business models that have been adapted in other sectors to therefore be applied in automotive. Automotive as an industry, is one of the largest industries. Cars, on average, are the second most expensive assets most people purchase. And it's an industry that hasn't changed in structure for about 100 years. So there's a lot of things that can be changed. The size of the market is in the trillions of dollars, and everybody on a day-to-day basis needs transportation to get around. And yet there are many problems that have crept into the industry over time, whether it's, you know, congestion in cities, fatalities and other kinds of accidents caused by cars, pollution, and all the bad effects that come with that, etc. So there's a lot of challenges in this industry, which from an entrepreneur or a tech perspective are also opportunities. And it's in a stage of rapid transformation in which the industry understands it needs to change, and entrepreneurs are seeing opportunities in creating exciting businesses.
And since we're in Tel Aviv, what kind of why is it mainly companies from Tel Aviv that are seeing this these opportunities?
So it's not only companies in Tel Aviv, but Israel is, outside of the United States, probably the biggest innovation hub, definitely on a per capita basis. I mean, it's a country of 8 million people, and yet the number of startups in Tel Aviv is tremendous. The official numbers are about 550 mobility startups in Israel alone.
550?
Yes, so that's a lot of startups that have already emerged over the last few years. And Israel's success or track record in the space is already very good. If you think of a company like Waze, which is one of Israel's best-known successes, that's a mobility company. If you think of Mobileye, which is Israel's largest IPO, largest acquisition from the tech space, that's also a mobility transportation company. So what does Israel do that's interesting in the space? I think Israel's a very strong hub of B2B innovation, enterprise technologies that are often deep tech, things like sensors, cybersecurity, things around data manipulation. Israeli startups tend to be weaker on the B2C side, so things that are consumer facing that require, you know, marketing and a lot of kind of polish. Israelis are much more direct, much more practical, so very good at, you know, real innovation, deep technologies, a little less good at the consumer facing stuff. And what the automotive industry needs for the most part right now is this deep tech. And that's why we're seeing, you know, 2 weeks ago, Bill Ford was in Israel opening an R&D center. The same week, Renault-Nissan-Mitsubishi Alliance opened their R&D center. We've seen, you know, GM's been here for a decade. Many other car makers and many suppliers are actively involved in the Israeli ecosystem because they're trying to access this innovation that is emerging.
So these Israeli startups are sort of behind-the-scenes companies for instance, European and Asian car manufacturers?
Yes, there's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that is happening. In general, cars you know, have changed a lot over time in a way that consumers don't fully see, whether it's, you know, autonomous or ADAS features that have been introduced, but also technologies that allow vehicles to be updated, the software in the vehicles to be updated. You know, the way in which the data that's being ported out of the vehicle can be anonymized and used for various different use cases that allow consumers to have better experiences, like ordering. If you're making an online order for food and your vehicle's location can be shared, you can choose to share that location, you might have a better, you know, sales experience. So there's a lot of different business models around that. Technologies like sensors that go into the vehicle, ways in which you know, data can be leveraged in order to create better emergency and safety responses when you have a crash or an accident for first responders. So you're seeing the range of innovation coming out of Israel is very broad, and the needs within the market right now are quite significant.
And is it correct to assume that when you first have one technology, there will be another kind of innovation on top of that technology? I mean, you mentioned cybersecurity. If you have connected cars, the next natural step would be security.
Yeah, I think I call cybersecurity in automotive a bit like the canary in the coal mine. There are all these changes that are happening on the platform of the car, that the car is becoming basically a computer network. So you've got many subcomputers within the vehicle and a network that connects those. And then that network is itself connected to the cloud. And that enables all of these functions. So, you know, whether it's autonomous driving or better infotainment or these consumer experiences using data, all of that is built on top of this quote-unquote platform. So the vehicle is becoming more and more a digital platform. It's, you know, come a certain portion of the way, but it still has a long way to go. So it's in some ways analogous to, you know, the shift from feature phones to smartphones. We're not really in a smartphone world, so to speak, for cars, because it's still very hard to update them. It's very hard to just, you know, have developer communities developing apps for cars. And a lot of the reasons for that is because of the requirements to have safe and reliable vehicles, and you don't want third parties just being able to access it. The way that cars have been built and also the amount of time they spent designing and updating vehicles affects that. But at the same time, like you said, there's a kind of layering that's happening. So as you solve one layer of problem, you enable new opportunities to be built on top of those solutions. And so you're seeing, on the one hand, ride-hailing companies like Uber becoming a platform on which other companies can build businesses. You're seeing the digital piece of this, where you have, you know, data and other services or software running on the vehicle, creating cyber vulnerabilities, which cybersecurities are beginning to address. You're seeing autonomous technology needing things like, you know, silicon optimized for the processing of that data. We have a company doing something like that called Halo. So we're seeing a broad range of different needs across the industry, which are creating new opportunities for startups. And as the industry evolves, new opportunities emerge.
When you do investment in this field, do you have sort of an overall vision for the car, as you mentioned, as a platform in the future in like 5, 10, 15 years? I mean, what will the car be like in the future?
We have kind of like an evolving thesis of what the world will look like in the future. And I guess any investor is building a mental model of what the world looks like and then trying to match opportunities against that model. The fact that we're a mobility-focused fund means we can spend a lot more time thinking about those shifts and changes and be kind of accurate in what we imagine and have a pretty broad view so that when we're seeing opportunities, we can fit them to kind of what we expect to see. If there's a disparity, you know, why is there disparity? Is it our misjudgment or is there something that the company itself is missing? So we've got kind of a model or a vision for how this evolves. But at the same time, we're trying to update that all the time. I think, you know, if you kind of looked at the autonomous vehicle industry 2 years ago, I think there would have been a lot more optimism about timelines for that. And that's been revised downward across the industry. I think in some ways we're now in a kind of stage of disillusionment where everybody's like, well, it's way off, and, you know, not recognizing the real opportunities that are starting to emerge. So it's, you know, it's very hard to sum up what the car or the world will look like in 5 years' time. You know, there's cliches like in some ways it will look, you know, less different than what you'd expect, and in other ways it will look more different than what you'd expect, and trying to figure out what the things that will be more different are and what the things that will be less different are is obviously important. We do know that it takes, you know, sometimes 3 years, sometimes 5 years to integrate new technologies into the vehicle. So, I mean, the most important change that's happening in the industry is that there's going to be a lot more electric vehicles, and we're especially seeing that push in Europe, where regulations around air pollution are more stringent. So that's a real change that actually affects consumers in various ways. What it feels like to drive an electric vehicle is very different. It has better performance. It creates challenges around charging infrastructure, but if you have like a home charger, you wake up with a full fuel tank every day effectively, so you never have to refuel. So there's many changes that introduces into people's lives. In terms of, you know, digital technologies on the back end, you know, I think even trying to sum up how smartphones have changed our lives, you can point to specific instances, but a lot of it is, you know, small things accumulated over time. And I think also the automotive industry has these small things accumulating over time. That, you know, once you have autonomous vehicles at scale, that's obviously going to be a very different world, but there are going to be a lot of other things that accumulate over time. And in a kind of more narrow sense, if you look at a company like Uber, they're providing autonomous vehicles. You just have a human providing the autonomy. But many aspects of the business model are already here, which is you can use your phone, a vehicle comes to you automatically, you don't have to do anything, you get in the back, you don't have to do anything, and the entire ride you can do other things other than drive. You know, a lot of time has been invested by people around the world into driving themselves various places. So Uber provides a different option, but it's obviously not the same as a fully autonomous vehicle where you have this done in a completely autonomous manner. So I think what's, you know, I'm happy to address specific questions about how the world might change, but I think what's really interesting about the space is that it affects our lives very directly, and it's so broad-reaching. It affects how our cities are structured, the walkability of our cities, what it's like even to, you know, to buy things in a city. If there's a street that's busy with cars, or a street that's got less cars and a bike lane, I think it feels different from a citizen's perspective, and it affects the commerce in that area. So there's a lot of broad-reaching effects. You know, cars have many connections to various aspects of our lives, whether it's commuting to work or going away on the weekends. And, you know, all of these are addressable markets as you shift the model. You know, I think what inspires us and motivates us is this is something that really does affect people's lives. It's not like optimizing clicking on ads, which many people in Tel Aviv and in various other tech ecosystems also do. But this is actually transformative in some way and can improve people's lives.
But your time perspective must be quite long, since you're an early stage investor and do A rounds, isn't it?
Yeah, I think we're looking at, you know, a 7-year-ish horizon, ideally on investments. You know, I think it's always exciting when you have a company that grows rapidly, and so, you know, all investors are looking for high growth companies that are going to transform things quickly. But I think we've approached this market from a long term perspective too. We don't expect, you know, full autonomous vehicles to be rolling out in 2 years' time. I think we've got quite a lot of realism around that. If you think about the last 20 years or even 30 years of disruption created by tech, you know, I think cell phones and the internet have been trends that have played out over decades. And even though, you know, when the iPhone was released, that was transformative, it wasn't clear then that Snapchat would become a big company, or, you know, WhatsApp or Instagram. Even though those companies were essentially built on the back of that platform. So I think we see a very long-term opportunity. We see lots of challenges and lots of inefficiencies. Cars are used on average, you know, 4% of the time. If you had a factory that was running 1.5 days a month, that would be the efficiency of the average car, and it's the second most expensive asset most people own. So there's a lot of room to improve that. If you think about the amount of urban real estate that has just been dedicated towards, you know, parked cars. If you walk around most cities, there are just parked cars everywhere, taking up often, you know, 10 to 20% of the public space. And then you have these fights that are emerging around, you know, scooters and kind of the safety that they introduce and, you know, using up pedestrian space. But it's because cars have taken so much of the public thoroughfare. For parked cars or moving cars, it's like, you know, some places, if you look at it, it's just like 80% of public spaces is no man's land except if you're a car. So, you know, I think you're going to see these shifts happening. There's a lot of challenges to address. There are a lot of interrelations also with politics and regulation. Which is another aspect that makes this interesting, but also challenging, and also requires a longer-term perspective. And it's also a very global shift. It's not just, you know, Tel Aviv or Europe or the U.S. You're seeing companies like Didi and Ola and Grab expanding into a lot of the developing world. You're seeing new technologies bundled with transportation, that these are drivers for development, and they're also transforming people's lives, giving them access to new opportunities, and accelerating the development of these countries.
So it's not only about cars, it's also about mobility in general?
For sure. Yeah, we're investing in mobility, broadly speaking. If you look at a company like Uber or Ola, what they're selling is essentially a trip. And when you start thinking about the world in terms of trips, there are many other kinds of trips that can replace a car trip, or a train trip, or a bus trip. So there are a few forms of trips that are more established, but the new forms of trips that are emerging. We backed this company in New York called Revel Transit, which is an electric moped company. So you sit down, it's basically a legal vehicle, it's got a license plate, parks in a parking spot, but it goes much faster than the kick scooters. Kick scooters are kind of in-between vehicles that kind of share space with pedestrians or bikes, but in many cases they're kind of being forced onto the road, but they can't go the same speed as cars, so it feels less safe, so they tend to go on the sidewalks, but then pedestrians feel less safe. We feel like mopeds are a good way to balance that, because they are going the speed of cars, they include helmets, so they're much safer, they fit into existing regulations, so there's a regulatory framework for them. And we're seeing in Brooklyn, where they launched 1,000 mopeds a few weeks ago, incredible demand, excitement around the solution that they're providing, because, you know, in New York, there are not many ways to get from Brooklyn to Queens. You know, the transit's all going in and out of Manhattan. And, you know, when we were there for the launch, the excitement of just being able... what micromobility does is it makes a city feel smaller. And, you know, the strongest feeling of that was, you know, when I was in Brooklyn riding on one of these things, because everything feels close and accessible, and getting there is fun. You know, you feel the air on your face, and you interact with pedestrians in a way that you can't when you're in a vehicle. And I think, most importantly, people that I talk to, my friends, you know, care about the space. If you talk to your friends about, you know, back-end web development, like, they fall asleep at the dinner table, right? So everybody cares about transportation. Everybody's affected by, you know, ride-hailing services or scooters. You know, some people hate them, some people love them. But it's because it's changing people's lives. If you think about traffic, this is something that people, you know, are passionate about, because it's, you know, an agony that many people face on a day-to-day basis. So I think, you know, over time and with perspective, you know, this isn't something that's going to play out in, you know, overnight. This is something that's going to play out over many years. There's some things that are happening very quickly, and they're very interesting investment opportunities, and the other things that require patience and strategy and the right perspective. But it really feels like this is an exciting space to be investing in, to be participating in, to be a part of this community and this ecosystem. And I do think that we're kind of in the first inning, so to speak, that there are many waves of transformation that still are yet to come. There are going to be more and more people who, you know, transition into working in this industry, and that, you know, it's an industry that gives people a sense of excitement and purpose to be a participant in. So that's all very exciting.
Well, what about flying cars?
I think flying cars are interesting, but I think there's still significant regulatory challenges around them. You're seeing companies like Airbus and Boeing taking them very seriously, and Uber's also investing. You're also seeing Amazon launching drone delivery services. So I think we will see some applications. You know, again, if you put the right lens on things, helicopters are a kind of a flying car, right? But there are obviously challenges with helicopters, and I think you'll find some of those same challenges apply to flying cars. So I think, you know, it's even harder to design safe, reliable flying cars than self-driving cars. So I don't anticipate a huge transformation happening very quickly in that space. But at the same time, you know, if you're flying in the sky, you're kind of building a road in the sky. You know, there's a lot of space up there to work with, and we don't have that much space on the ground because roads are very congested. So it obviously solves certain problems, but it also has significant challenges attached to it.
Du kan som altid finde links til dagens emner på tektopia.dk. Du kan skrive til mig på henrik@tektopia.dk. Du kan følge debatten i vores Facebook-gruppe, der hedder Tektopia Backstage. Du kan også følge med på Twitter, der hedder vi @tektopia.dk. Og så kan du høre vores søster, tvillinge, brorprogram, whatever man kalder det, på Radio 4, Tektopia Radio 4, der udkommer hver søndag kl. 13.05, og i øvrigt også findes som podcast, der hvor du nu engang henter alle dine andre podcast, inklusiv den du lytter til nu. Tilbage er der bare at sige på genhør, og godt nytår. Tektopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi. Den er udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Teknologiens Mediehus, HI-messen, Index Award, Innovation Center Danmark og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Tektopia. Tektopia.